Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp, part of the District of Wonders Network, featuring Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, and Crime City Central. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
This is Protecting Project Pulp, episode 106. I'm your host, Simon Hildebrandt. Welcome to the show. This week we bring you Part of the Game, the second installment of Sex Slaves of the Dragon Tong by F. Paul Wilson, narrated by James Silverstein. If you haven't already, I'd strongly recommend listening to the introduction of episode 105. It contains the biographical information regarding this episode, and more importantly, the foreword that accompanied this story during its publication, which helps to provide context for this modern homage to a period with very different attitudes to race. So without further distraction, this is Part of the Game, Part 2 of Sex Slaves of the Dragon Tong by F. Paul Wilson, narrated by James Silverstein.
Sex Slaves of the Dragon Tong, Part 2, Part of the Game. "You have been brought to attention of a most illustrious one," Zhang Jifu said. The Chinaman wore long black cotton pajamas with a high collar and onyx button front. He'd woven his hair up into a braid that snaked out from beneath a traditional black skullcap. His eyes were as shiny and black as his onyx buttons and, typical of his kind, gave nothing away. Detective Sergeant Hank Sorensen smiled. "I guess the Mandarin heard about my little show at Wang's Pai Gao parlor last night." Zhang's mug remained typically unscrutable. "I not mention such a one."
"Didn't have to. Tell him I want to meet him."
Zhang blinked. "Got him. Direct speech always set these chinks back on their heels." Hank let his cup of tea cool on the small table between them. He'd pretended to take a sip or two, but no drop would pass his lips. He doubted anyone down here would make a move against a bull, but you could never be sure where the Mandarin was concerned. He tried to get a bead on the coolie. A call in the night from someone saying he was Zhang Jifu, a representative, these chinks made him laugh, of an important man in Chinatown. He didn't have to say who. Hank knew. The chink said they must meet to discuss important matters of mutual interest at the Jade Moon, 10 a.m. Hank knew the place, next to a Plum Street Joss house, and he'd arrived early. First thing he'd done was check out the rear alley. All clear. Inside, he'd chosen a corner table near the rear door and seated himself with his back to the wall. The Jade Moon wasn't exactly high-end as Chinkytown restaurants went. Dirty floors, smudged tumblers, chipped lacquer on the doors and trims, ratty-looking paper lanterns dangling from the exposed beams. Not the kind of place you'd expect to meet a minion of the mysterious and powerful and ever-elusive Mandarin. The Mandarin didn't run Chinatown's rackets. He had a better deal. He skimmed them. Never got his hands dirty except with the money that crossed them. Dope, prostitution, gambling. The Mandarin took a cut of everything. How he pulled that off was a bigger mystery than his identity. Hank had dealt with the Tongs down here before. Tough mugs, one and all. Not the sort you'd figure to hand over part of their earnings without a fight. But they did. Well, maybe there'd been a dust-up and they lost. But if that was what had happened, it must have been fought out of sight because he hadn't heard a word about it. Hank had been running the no-ticky-no-shirty beat for SFPD since 1935, 3 years here, and he'd yet to find anyone who'd ever seen the Mandarin. And they weren't just saying they'd never seen him. They meant it. If his time down here had taught him anything, it was you never ask a chink a direct question. You couldn't treat them like regular people. You had to approach everything on an angle. They were devious, crafty, always dodging and weaving, always ducking the question and avoiding an answer. He'd developed a nose for their lies, but he had never caught a whiff of deceit when he'd asked about the Mandarin. Even when he'd played rough with a character or two, they didn't know who the big guy was, where he was, or even what he looked like. It had taken Hank a while to reach the astonishing conclusion that they didn't want to know, and that had taken him aback. Chinks were gossip mongers. Yak, 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 and their sing-song voices trading rumors and tidbits like a bunch of old biddies. For them to avoid talking about someone meant they were afraid. Even the little people were afraid. That said something for the Mandarin's reach. Hank had to admit he was impressed, but hardly afraid. He wasn't a chink. Zhang had arrived exactly at 10, kowtowing before seating himself. "Even if I knew such a one," the Chinaman said, "I am sure he not meet with you. He send emissary, just as my master send me." Hank smiled. "These chinks. Okay, if that's the way we're going to play it, you tell your master that I want a piece of his pie." Zhang frowned. "Pie?" "His cream, his skim, his payoff from all the opium and dollar-dollar girls and gambling down here." "Ah, so," Zhang nodded. "My master realized that such an arrangement is part of everyday business, but one such as he not sully hands with such. He suggests you contact various sources of activities that interest you and make own arrangements with these establishments." Hank leaned forward and put on his best snarl. "Listen, you yellow-faced lug. I don't have time to go around bracing every penny ante operation down here. I know your boss gets a cut from all of them, so I want a cut from him. Clear?"
"I afraid that quite impossible."
"Nothing is impossible," he leaned back. "But I'm a reasonable man. I don't want it all. I don't even want half of it. I'll settle for an even split of just his gambling take." Zhang smiled.
"This a jest, yes?"
"I'm serious. Dead serious. He can keep everything from the dope and the heifer dens. I want half of the Mandarin's gambling take." Hank knew that was where the money was in Chinatown. Opium was big down here. But gambling? These coolies gambled on anything and everything. They had their games, sure. Parlors for Fantan, Mahjong, Pa Gao, Sik Bo, Pak Kip Pew, and others. But they didn't stop there. Numbers had a huge take. He'd seen slips collected day and night on street corners all over the quarter. Write down three numbers, hand them in with your money, and pray the last three Dow Jones digit matched yours at the end of trading. They'd bet on just about any damn thing, even the weather. They didn't bother to hide their games, either. They'd post the hours of operation on their doors, and some even had touts standing out front urging people inside. Gambling was in their blood, and gambling was where the money was, so gambling was where Hank wanted to be. No, make that would be. Zhang shook his head and began to rise.
"So sorry, Detective Sorensen, but..."
Hank sprang up from his chair and grabbed the front of Zhang's black top. "Listen, chink boy, this is not negotiable. One way or another, I'm going to be part of this game down here. Get that? A big part, or else there'll be no game. I'll bring in squad after squad, and we'll collar every numbers coolie and shut down every lousy parlor in the quarter. Mahjong, Sik Bo, you name it, it's history. And then what will your boss's take be? What's 100% of nothing, huh?" He jerked Zhang closer and backhanded him across the face, then shoved him against the wall. "Tell him he either gets smart or he gets nothing." Hank might have said more, but the look of murderous rage in Zhang's eyes stalled the words in his throat.
"Dog," the chink whispered through clenched teeth. "You have made this one lose face before these people."
Hank looked around the suddenly silent restaurant. Diners and waiters alike stood frozen, gawking at him. But Hank Sorensen wasn't about to be cowed by a bunch of coolies. He jabbed a finger at Zhang. "Who do you think you are, calling me a..." Zhang made a slashing motion with his hands. "I am a servant of one who would not wipe his slippers on your back. You make this one lose face, and that mean you make him lose face. Woe to you, Detective Sorensen." Without warning, he let out a yelp and slammed the knife edge of his hand onto the table, then turned and walked away. He was halfway to the door when the table fell apart. Hank stood in shock, staring down at the pile of splintered wood. "What the..." Never mind that now. He gathered his wits and looked around. He wanted out of here, but he didn't want to walk past all those staring eyes. They might see how he was shaking inside. That table. If Zhang could do that to wood, what could he do to a neck? Fending off that unsettling thought, he left by a back door. He took a deep breath of putrid back alley air as he stepped outside. The late morning sun hadn't risen high enough yet to break up the shadows here. Well, he'd delivered his message. And the fact that Zhang had struck the table instead of him only reinforced what he already knew. No worry about ball busting down here. No chink would dare lay a hand on a buzzer-carrying member of the SFPD. They knew what would happen in their neighborhoods if anyone got caught doing something like that. He sighed as he walked down the street. At least during his time in the restaurant, he'd been thinking of something other than Tempest. But now she came back to him. Her face, her form, her voice. Oh, that voice. Tempest, Tempest, Tempest. Zhang knelt before the Mandarin and pressed his forehead against the stone floor. I should have killed the dog for his insult to you, Venerable. Instead of his usual Cantonese, Zhang spoke in Mandarin, fittingly the language the Mandarin preferred. No, the master said in his soft, sibilant voice. You did well not to harm him. We must find a more indirect path to deal with such a one. Sit, Zhang. Thank you, illustrious. Zhang raised his head from the floor but remained kneeling, daring only a furtive peek at his master. Many times he had seen the one known throughout Chinatown as the Mandarin. Not even Zhang knew his true name, but that did not lessen the wonder of his appearance. A high-shouldered man, standing tall and straight with his hands folded inside the sleeves of his embroidered robe. A black skullcap covered the thin hair that fringed his high, domed forehead. Zhang marveled as ever as his light green eyes that almost seemed to glow. He did not know if his master was truly a Mandarin. He had heard someone address him once as Doctor, or merely called such because of the dialect he preferred. He did know the master spoke many languages. He'd heard him speak English, French, German, and even a low form of Hindi to the dacoits in his employ. For all the wealth flowing through his coffers, the master lived frugally. The money went back to the homeland, for to serve a purpose higher than mere creature comfort. So, this miserable offspring of a maggot demands half the gambling tribute, wishes to be, how did he put it, part of the game. Yes, magnificent. The master closed his eyes. Part of the game. Part of the game. By all means, we must grant his wish. Zhang spent the ensuing moments of silence in a whirlpool of confusion. The master giving in to the cockroach's demands? Unthinkable. And yet he'd said... An upward glance showed the master's eyes open again and the hint of a smile curving his thin lips. Yes, that is it. We shall make him part of the game. Zhang had seen that smile before. He knew what usually followed. It made him three times glad he was not Detective Sorensen. Hank held up his double-breasted tuxedo and inspected it, paying special attention to the wide satin lapels. No spots. Good. He could get in a few more wares before sending it for cleaning. As always, he was struck by the incongruity of a tux in his shabby two-room apartment. Well, it should look out of place. It had cost him a month's rent. All for Tempest. That babe was costing him a fortune. Trouble was, he didn't have a fortune. But the Chinatown games would fix that. He shook his head. That kind of scheme would have been unthinkable back in the days when he was a fresh bull, and if not for Tempest, it would still be. But a woman can change everything. A woman can turn you inside out and upside down. Tempest was one of those women. He remembered the first time he'd seen her at the Serendipity Club, like getting gut-punched. She wasn't just a choice piece of calico. She had the kind of looks that could put your conscience on hold. Then she'd stepped up to the mic and... voice like an angel. When Hank heard her sing, I've Got You Under My Skin, that was it. He was gone. He'd heard Doris Lessing sing it 100 times on the radio, but Tempest made him feel like she was singing to him. Hank had stayed on through the last show. When she finished, he followed her. A flash of his buzzer got him past the geezer guarding the backstage door and asked her out. A cop wasn't the usual stage door Johnny, and so she said okay. Hank had gone all out to impress her, and they'd been on the town half a dozen times so far. She'd tapped him out without letting him go to first base. He knew he wasn't the only guy she dated. He'd spied her out with a couple of rich cake eaters, but Hank wasn't the sharing kind. Trouble was, to get an exclusive on her was going to take moolah, lots of it. And he was going to get lots of it. A steady stream. He yawned. What with playing the bon vivant by night and the soft heel by day, he wasn't getting much sleep. He dropped onto the bed, rolled onto his back, and closed his eyes. Tempest didn't go on for another couple of hours, so a catnap would be just the ticket. He was slipping into that mellow, drowsy state just before dropping off to sleep when he felt a sharp pain in his left shoulder, like he'd been stabbed with an ice pick. As he bolted out of bed, Hank felt something wriggling in his undershirt. He reached back and felt little legs, lots of little legs. Fighting a sick revulsion, he grabbed it and pulled. It writhed and twisted in his hand, but held fast to his skin. Hank clenched his teeth and yanked. As the thing came free, pain like he'd never known or imagined exploded in his shoulder, driving him to his knees. He dropped the wriggling creature and slapped a hand over the live coal embedded in his shoulder. Through tear-blurred vision, he saw a scarlet millipede at least 8 inches long scurrying away across the floor. What the? He reached for something, anything, to use against it. He grabbed a shoe and smashed it down on the thing. The heel caught the back half of the body, and Hank felt it swish with a crunch. The front half spasmed, reared up, then tore free and darted under the door and out into the hallway before he could get a second shot. Hell with it. His shoulder was killing him. He brought his hand away and found blood in his palm. Not much, but enough to shake him. He struggled to his feet and stepped into his tiny bathroom. The bright bulb over the speckled mirror picked up the beads of sweat on his brow. He was shaking. What was that thing? He'd never seen anything like it. And how had it gotten in his room? In his bed, for Christ's sake! He half-turned and angled his shoulder towards the mirror. The size of the bite surprised him. Only a couple of punctures with a small smear of blood. From the ferocity of the pain, he expected something like a 38 entry wound. The burning started to subside. Thank God. He balled up some toilet tissue and dabbed at the wound. Looky there. Stop bleeding already. He went back to the front room and looked at the squashed remains of the thing. Damn. Looked like something you'd find in the jungle, like in the Amazon. How'd it wind up in San Francisco? Probably crawled off a boat. Hank shuddered as he noticed a couple of the rearmost legs still twitching. He kicked it into the corner. "The usual table, detective," Maurice said with a practiced smile. Hank nodded and followed the serendipity's maitre d' to a second-level table for two just off the dance floor. "Thank you, Maurice." He passed him a fin he could barely afford as they shook hands. He ordered a scotch and water and started a tab. This was the last night he'd be able to do this until the Mandarin came across with some lucre. He shook his head. All it takes is money. You don't have to be smart or even good-looking. All you need is lots of do-re-mi and everyone wants to know you. Suddenly, you're Mr. Popularity. As Hank sipped his drink and waited for Tempest to take the stage, he felt his shoulders start to burn. Damn, not again. The pain had lasted only a half hour at the bite, and then it felt as good as new, but now it was back, growing stronger. Heat spread from the bite, flowing through him, burning his skin, breaking him out in a sweat. Suddenly he had no strength. His hands, his arms, his legs, all rubbery. The glass slipped from his fingers, spilling scotch down the pleated front of his shirt. The room rocked and swayed as he tried to rise, but his legs wouldn't hold him. He felt himself falling, saw the curlicue pattern on the rug rushing at him. Then nothing. Hank opened his eyes and found himself looking up at a woman in white. She looked about 50. He looked down, more white. Sheets. He was in a bed. Where? She flashed a reassuring smile. You're in St. Luke's and you're going to be just fine. I'll let the doctor know you're awake. Hank watched her bustle out the door. He felt dazed. The last thing he remembered, the bite from the millipede. Poison. Had to be. The pain had tapered to a dull ache, but he still felt weak as a kitty. A balding man with a gray mustache strode through the door and stepped up to the bed. He wore a white coat with a pair of pens in the breast pocket and carried a clipboard under his arm. "Detective Sorensen," he said, extending his hand, "I'm Dr. Cranston, and you've got quite a boil on your back."
"Boil?"
"Yes, a pocket of infection in your skin. You shouldn't let those things go. The infection can seep into your system and make you very ill. How long have you had it?" Hank pulled the hospital gown off his shoulder and gaped at the golf ball-sized red swelling. "That wasn't there when I put on my shirt tonight." Dr. Cranston harumphed. "Of course it was. These things don't reach that size in a matter of hours." A flash of anger cut through Hank's fuzzy brain. "This one did. I was bitten there by a giant bug around 7 o'clock. Cranston smoothed his mustache.
"Really?
What kind of bug?"
"Don't know. Never seen anything like it."
"Well, be that as it may, we'll open it up, clean out the infection, and you'll be on your way in no time."
Hank hoped so.
Bared to the waist, Hank lay on his belly while the nurse swabbed his shoulder with some sort of antiseptic. "You may feel a brief sting as I break the skin, but once we relieve the pressure from all that pus inside, it'll be like money from home." Hank looked up and saw the scalpel in Cranston's hand. He turned away.
"Do it."
Cranston was half right. Hank felt the sting, but no relief. He heard Cranston mutter, "Well, this is one for Ripley's." Hank didn't like the sound of that.
"What's wrong?"
"Most odd. There's no pus in it. Only serous fluid."
"What's serous fluid?"
"A clear amber fluid, just like you'd see seeping from a burn blister. Most odd. Most odd." Cranston cleared his throat. "I believe we'll keep you overnight. But I can't. You must. You're too weak to be sent home. And I want to look into this insect. What did it look like?"
"Send someone to my place and you'll find its back half."
"I believe I'll do just that." 2 days cooped up in a hospital room hadn't made Hank any better. He had to get out to seal the deal with the Mandarin, but how? He was able to stand and walk. Shuffle was more like it. But he still felt so weak. All the pounds were dropping off him like leaves from a tree. That boil, or whatever, had gone from a lump to a big open sore that wept fluid all day. He was sitting on the edge of the bed, looking out at the Fogden city when Cranston trundled in.
"Well, we've identified the millipede."
Here was the first good news since he'd been bitten.
"What is it?"
"The entomologist over at Berkeley gave it a name as long as your arm. Other than that, they weren't much help. Said it was very, very rare, and that only a few have ever been seen. Couldn't imagine how it managed to travel from the rainforest of Borneo to your bed."
"Borneo?" Hank said.
Everyone had heard of the wild man from Borneo, but...
just where the hell is Borneo?
"It's an island in the South China Sea."
"Did you say South China Sea?"
Cranston nodded.
"Yes.
Why, is that important?"
Hank didn't answer. He couldn't. It was all clear now. Good Christ. China.
The Mandarin had sent his reply to Hank's demand.
"There's, something else you should know."
Cranston's tone snapped Hank's head up. The doctor looked uneasy. His gaze wandered to the window.
"You mean it gets worse?"
Cranston's nod sent a sick, cold spike through Hank's gut.
"Okay, give it to me."
Cranston took a breath.
"The millipede may or may not have injected you with venom, but that's not the problem."
His voice trailed off. Hank didn't know if he wanted to hear this.
"What is the problem, then?"
"You remember when we did a scraping of the wound?"
"How could I forget?"
"Well, we did a microscopic examination and found what, appear to be eggs." Hank's gut twisted into a knot.
"Eggs?"
Yes. Did you get them all?
We don't know. They're quite tiny. But we'll go back in and do another scraping, deeper this time. But you should know...
Know what? Cranston's gaze remained fixed on the window.
They're hatching.
Next day, one of the green soft heels, a grade one detective named Brannigan, stopped by to ask about Chinatown. He'd been assigned to look for a missing white girl last seen down there. He was asking about the Mandarin. Hank warned him away, even went as far as to show him the big weeping ulcer on his shoulder. Suddenly he was seized by a coughing fit, one that went on and on until he hacked up a big glob of bright red phlegm. The blood shocked him, but the sight of the little things wriggling in the gooey mass completely unnerved him.
"Oh, God!" he cried to Brannigan. "Call the doctor! Get the nurse in here! Hurry!"
The eggs had hatched, and they were in his lungs. How had they gotten into his lungs? Sick horror pushed a sob to his throat. He tried to hold back until Brannigan was out the door. He didn't think he'd make it. Hank stared at the stranger in the bathroom mirror.
"It's not unprecedented," Cranston had said. "Larva of the Ascaris roundworm, for instance, gets into the circulation and migrate through the lung. But we've had no experience with this species."
He saw sunken cheeks, glassy, feverish eyes, sallow, sweaty skin as pale as the sink, and he knew he was looking at a dead man. Why hadn't he just played it straight, or at least only a little bent, and taken a payoff here and there from the bigger gambling parlors? Why had he tried to go for the big score? 3 days since he coughed up the first of those baby millipedes. Now he was hacking them up every day. That thing must have laid thousands, maybe tens of thousands of eggs in his shoulder. Her babies were sitting in his lungs, sucking off blood as they passed through, eating him alive from the inside, and no one could do a damn thing about it. He started to cry. He'd been doing that a lot lately. He couldn't help it. He felt so damn helpless. The phone started to ring. Probably Hanrahan. The chief had been down to see him once and had never returned. Hank didn't blame him. Probably couldn't stand looking at the near-empty shell he'd become. Hank shuffled to the bedside and picked up the receiver.
"Yeah?" "Ah, Detective Sorensen," said a voice he immediately recognized. "So glad you are still with us."
A curse leapt to his lips, but he bit it back. He didn't need any more bugs in his bed. "No thanks to you."
"Ah, so. A most regrettable turn of events, but also most inevitable given such circumstances."
"Did you call to gloat?"
"Ah, no. I called to offer you your wish."
Hank froze as a tremor of hope ran through his ravaged body. He was almost afraid to ask.
"You can cure me?" "Come again to Jade Moon at 3 o'clock this day, and your wish shall be granted."
The line went dead. The cab stopped in front of the Jade Moon. Hank needed just about every ounce of strength to haul himself out of the rear seat. The nurses had wailed, Dr. Cranston had blustered, but they couldn't keep him if he wanted to go. When they saw how serious he was, the nurses dug up a cane to help him walk. He leaned on that cane now and looked around. The sidewalk in front of the restaurant was packed with chinks, and every one of them staring at him. Not just staring, pointing and whispering, too. Couldn't blame them. He must be quite a sight in his wrinkled, oversized tux. Used to fit like tailor-made, but now it hung on him like a coat on a scarecrow. But he'd had no choice. This had been the only clothing in the hospital room closet. He stepped on the curb and stood, swaying. For a few seconds he feared he might fall. The cane saved him. He heard the sing-song babble increase and noticed that the crowd was growing with more chinks pouring from all directions, so many that they blocked the street, all staring, pointing, whispering. Obviously Zhang had put out the word to come see the bad joss that befell anyone who went against the Mandarin. Well, Hank thought as he began to shuffle towards the restaurant door. Enjoy the show, you yellow bastards. The crowd parted for him and watched as he struggled to open the door. No one stepped up to help. Someone inside pushed it open and pointed to the rear of the restaurant. Hank saw Zhang sitting at the same table where they first met. Only this time, Zhang's back was to the wall. He didn't kowtow, didn't even rise when Hank reached the table. "Sit, Detective Sorensen," he said, indicating the other chair. He looked exactly the same as he had last time. Same black pajamas, same skullcap, same braid, same expressionless face. Hank, on the other hand. "I'll stand." "Ah, so, you're not looking well. I must tell you that if you fall, this one will not help you up." Hank knew if he went down, he'd never be able to get up on his own. What then? Would all the chinks outside be paraded past him for another look? He dropped into the chair. That was when he noticed something like an ebony cigar box sitting before Zhang. "What's that? Another bug?" Zhang pushed it towards Hank. "Ah, no, very much opposite. This fight your infestation." Hank closed his eyes and bit back a sob. A cure? Is he really offering a cure? But he knew there had to be a catch. "What do I have to do for it?" "Must take 3 times a day. Hank couldn't believe it. "That's it? No strings?" Zhang shook his head. "No, as you say, strings." He opened the box to reveal dozens of cigarette-sized red paper cylinders. "Merely break one open 3 times a day and breathe fine powder within." As much as Hank wanted to believe, his mind still balked at the possibility that this could be on the level. "That's it? 3 times a day and I'll be cured?" "I not promise cure. I say fight infestation." "What's the difference? And what is this stuff?" "Eggs of tiny parasite." "A parasite?" Hank pushed the box away. "Not in your life." "This is true. Not on my life. On your life." "I don't get it." "There is order to the universe, Detective Sorensen. Everything must feed. Something may die so that others must live. And so it is with these powdery parasite eggs. Humans do not interest them. They grow only in larvae that infest your lung. They devour host from inside and leave own eggs in carcass." "Takes a parasite to kill a parasite? That's crazy." "Not crazy. It is poetry." "How do I know it won't just make me sicker?" Zhang smiled, the first time he changed expressions. "Sicker? How much more sick can Detective Sorensen be?" "I don't get it. You half kill me and then you offer to cure me. What's the deal? Your Mandarin want a pet cop, is that it?" "I know of no Mandarin. And once again, I not promise cure. Only chance of cure." Hank's hopes tripped but didn't fall. "You mean it might not work?" "It matter of balance, Detective. Have larvae gone too far for parasite to kill all in time? Or does Detective Sorensen still have strength enough left to survive? That is where fun come in."
"Fun? You call this fun?"
"Fun not for you or for this one. Fun for everyone else, because my master decide to grant wish you made."
"Wish? What wish?"
"To be part of game. Your very words, remember?" Hank remembered, but...
"I'm not following you."
"All of Chinatown taking bet on you."
"On me?"
"Yes. Even money on whether live or die. And amongst those who believe you soon join ancestors, a lottery on when." Another smile. "You have your wish, Detective Sorensen. You now very much part of game. Ah, so you are game." Hank wanted to scream. Wanted to bolt from his chair and wipe the smirk off Zhang's rotten yellow face.
That was only a dream. The best he could do was sob and let the tears stream down his cheeks as he reached into the box for one of the paper cylinders.
That was Part of the Game, Part 2 of Sex Slaves of the Dragon Tong by F. Paul Wilson, narrated by James Silverstein. I'll speak more on what I thought of this triptych after its conclusion. For now, I'll just draw your attention to another interesting cultural artifact of the pulp era, an excerpt from a letter from Robert E. Howard to H.P. Lovecraft. I won't give away too much except to say that it provides another angle on the issues covered in our current series of stories. Find the link in the show notes. Can a modern author write pulp fiction? Leave a comment on our site at protectingprojectpulp.com or join the conversation in the District of Wonders forum linked from the site menu. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the show via iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Just click the subscribe link. Thanks for listening from everyone here at PPP. Our assistant editor, Fred Heimbaugh, our sound engineer, Tom O'Dwyer, our producer, Tony C. Smith, and from me, your host, Simon Hildebrandt. We hope you'll join us next time for episode 107, where we'll bring you Dragon's Tongue, the third part of Sex Slaves of the Dragon Tong by F. Paul Wilson, narrated by James Silverstein. Remember that no bit of skirt is worth crossing the Dragon Tong for, and have a great week.
This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.